You're listening to the Just Giants podcast with Grump and the Cranky Fan.
Be sure to listen for free on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podbean.
Welcome back to Just Giants with Grump and the Cranky Fan, the best damn podcast for the best damn football team. I am your host, the football Grump. With me, as always, is Mike the Cranky Fan, and it is free agency kickoff day. The legal tampering period is a weird phrase that I think sounds creepy, and I don't like using it. And also, it's also like a lie. It's, you know, we know for sure that people are talking to these players, right? Like, we assume this.
Of course. Things, you know, just don't all of a sudden miraculously get agreed to within a course of a couple of hours. That's silly. We know that formally or informally, and nobody really seems to care, and that's fine.
I am kicking this episode off quickly because we have a lot to cover with a Jersey Cyclone bear cage. It is a brown ale, and it's awesome. I got some yesterday from the brewery itself. And I can't believe I went to a brewery yesterday, Sunday, so this is recorded Monday night, because Saturday I was in Morristown, New Jersey for their famous St. Patrick's Day parade and started drinking at 10 a.m. and lost my phone in an Uber that wound up in Hackensack that I couldn't get till Sunday morning. I was pretty sure I was only at two bars. I am learning today that I was at a third bar. I don't know what happened. I came home and passed out at about 4:30, 5 o'clock, and woke up at 6 o'clock. But hey, I was still, I'm a bit Irish, and I'm able to rebound quickly. Went to this brewery yesterday, got this excellent beer.
You're part Irish.
Mm-hmm.
You are? Your dad is?
No, my grandmother.
Oh. All right. There's a little bit. So this episode basically is brought to you by the Betty Ford Center. For people who need obvious treatment and help, check out the Betty Ford Center.
This is a marathon of a day, and it's going to start with some bittersweet news. Let's go over, I guess the biggest Giants news is Saquon Barkley signs with the Philadelphia Eagles to the tune of 3 years, $37.75 million, with incentives that can escalate up to $46.75 million, and he gets $26 million fully guaranteed at signing for a 27-year-old running back. Cranky, I'll give you the floor. I'll let you just go.
Yeah, this is probably going to be the episode that I'm probably going to make a lot of Giant fans mad. But, you know, something, you listen to this show for our opinions as much as our analysis, and I'm going to give you my opinions. I think I've been very consistent throughout this whole process that I thought the Giants should stay strong and re-sign Saquon Barkley on their terms. And if, you know, the market was not what they wanted to pay, they should let him walk. You know, Saquon Barkley was, you know, a very good player for the New York Football Giants. I think Giant fans had a little inflated opinion of what his value and his productivity actually was while he was a Giant. But in a lot of Giant fans, I think, consider him their guy. Much in the way a lot of Nick fans of a generation consider Carmelo Anthony their guy. And maybe that kind of love of a player sometimes overshadows the realities of where we are in March of 2024. In March of 2024, Saquon Barkley is 27 years old, 28 years old. He's had multiple injuries, some big time injuries, and he wants a lot of money. And the New York Football Giants, as much as we love our team, there's a lot of delusional fans out there who think we are further along in the process of becoming a real contender than we actually are. And I think, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, the Maras run this team because they are thinking about, well, he's the face of the franchise. We can't let him go. And I want to give kudos to them and to this front office for, you know, looking at the big picture of this team. And Yeah, it sucks. He went to our biggest rival. They, as someone pointed out today on Twitter, and I don't have it in front of me who it was, they know that I always say that the Eagles are in the giant trolling business. They love to troll us as much as they do want to compete for championships. And I think we all knew in the back of our minds that he may end up in Philly. So it sucks that he goes to a division rival, but I'd be willing to put up a dollar against somebody else's dollar that he doesn't play in both games against us next year because maybe a miscellaneous injury or two based on his history. I don't think he's going there all of a sudden and running for 2,000 yards. It sucks that he's going, but we have to do what's best for this organization. And some of the moves we'll talk about later probably don't happen if we give him what he wants because of his name and what his perceived value is.
That Philly grass is pretty bad condition, yeah? Or is that just my take?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's as bad as like FedEx Field or whatever it's going to be called,
Oh,
next
yeah.
year. But it's, I think it's still better than turf than what we have or any other turf field in the NFL.
Okay. Just thinking about his injury history and whatever. Listen, this sucks. I'm not really sure if Saquon Barkley is I have to think that this is at least somewhat a troll move, only because this is a lot of money, in my opinion. This is, I'm not gonna get into the financials here because the Eagles, as an organization, are at a completely different spot. This move, signing Barkley for, the amount of money is arguable, but signing Barkley makes sense if you're in the position of the Eagles. It's a little weird because I wouldn't expect them to spend this much money on the running back position for somebody this old with this many injuries. This is a lot. This is a head scratching move. I mean, frankly, if Dave Gettleman did this, it would be,
And remember, DeAndre Swift got signed by Chicago today for 3 years, $24 million.
It's a puzzling move. So it's hard to not think that this was not in some way justified in taking him from a rival, I guess. I had earlier speculated that this was just smoke, that they were putting the Giants in a position where they were, by inflating his price, by pretending to be competitive for him, that they could get the Giant not get the Giants into a bidding war with the Texans, but be in a win-win situation where the Giants would be out of price to retain their guy or force us to overspend to keep him. So either way, it's a win for them, That's what I thought was happening. Then they went and signed him to far more money than I was expecting him to go to the Texans for. This is it's a little bit head scratching to me, but the Eagles are in a different spot as a team, and this makes sense. Regarding Barkley's legacy here.
Well, one quick thing before we get into the legacy bit is that
Yeah, go
while
ahead.
I agree it's the right move what the Giants did based on where they are in their cycle, I also don't want to demonize and vilify him for going to the Eagles because it was not Saquon Barkley who didn't tag him. It was not Saquon Barkley that played for less money to stay with the Giants. I mean, we put him in a position to be a free agent. And once you're a free agent, you get your money and you get the situation that's best for you. I mean, if we let's say team A and team B, there's team A that's not very good on the field, not expected to be good in 2024, and wants to pay you less. And team B will give you more, and you have a pretty good chance to go pretty far in the playoffs. It's a no-brainer. So I am not going to call him a traitor or something like, that little bitch Tiki Barber did today. And when we're going to get into the legacy second in a second. But I think that was wrong. And I don't think he should not be booed when he comes back to the Meadowlands this year.
Well, here's my thing. I'm not gonna boo him. I am
No.
going to cheer extra loud when he gets a tackle for a loss against
Sure.
us. But temperature check for me as a Giants fan here. 2020, the like temperature check as of me standing in the rain week one, watching us lose 40 to nothing in an embarrassing fashion. You gotta walk before you run, right? So when you learn the game of football, the first thing you want to learn how to do is how to score points. And then from there, you worry about winning. And then from there, you worry about winning your division. And then from there, you worry about winning Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. We haven't passed the scoring points part yet. So Saquon could be an Eagle, a Cowboy, a Commander, all three in 1 year. It doesn't matter. Right now, the Giants are at the point where they have got to look themselves in the mirror and be like, we don't know how to score points. What we have going right now is not working. And that is not a Barkley is not the answer. It's not a Daniel Jones is not the answer. It's that all of it is not the answer. All of it, they're throwing it all away. You know, regardless of my philosophy on that, I think it goes down to this. I'm not going to worry about where Saquon Barkley plays because I have to worry about a team that can't score points first and foremost. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who we play. We can't score points. So,
yeah. So let's talk about his legacy because I was thinking about, you know, now that he's gone and I know where emotions are high now and we're going to wax poetic about, you know, how great he was. And I know a lot of fans are heartbroken and they'll be burning jerseys or just retiring them forever. But I was thinking about it, like, where does Barkley fit in Giant history and how should he be remembered and where should we place him in the pantheon? And just going back to, you know, the running backs that this team has had, you know, working backwards to like Tiki Barber, the Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw combination, you know, Rodney Hampton, you know, Joe Morris, you know, going all the way back, where is Saquon Barkley to you? And, you know, we can put it in levels of, is he a Ring of Honor guy? Is he a retired number guy? Is he a Hall of Famer? What is he to you?
Why don't you tell me what you think first? Because I have a kind of different take on where he is, but you finish your thought. I'm curious.
I think Saquon Barkley was an exciting player for this team. I think he gave this team an identity when it was really bad. I also think that he was the wrong pick at the wrong time for this organization. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think he's ever going to be, in my mind, what he potentially could have been. Some of it was, you know, beyond his control. You know, injuries happen. Having a horrible offensive line, having how many head coaches and how many offensive coordinators. But to me, he is not at the level that a Tiki Barber was. Or, you know, I don't think his name goes up in the Ring of Honor. I don't think there's anything that says to me he had an extraordinary career. Anything that pops to me and says this guy was, you know, one of the two best players on this team. He was that game breaker. I think he's he was a good player, a nice guy, a good face for this franchise, but immortalizing him as an all-time Giant, I think is recency bias. And I think quite honestly, because the bar on this team has been so lowered in the last decade that we're looking for idols and heroes wherever we can find them. And in the context of this team's long history, he's not up there with the elite.
Yeah. So when you initially asked us, you kind of framed it in the pantheon of running backs. And I think I think down the line, he's going to be remembered as, you know, the face of an era, right? So like, we'll look back and, you know, I think the rewriting of history will be much kinder to Eli Manning, especially now as he's gotten older. He's transitioned so well into that goofy guy. And you know what I mean? Like he could be a Tonight Show host, you know, in fact, He's essentially Jimmy Fallon, maybe even more talented. You know, we'll look over the fact that people blamed Eli Manning for everything for that, his entire career, even when he was objectively good. And I think that, you know, that will be like the Phil Simms era kind of. Then there's like the Reeves era into the Kerry Collins and Jim Fossil era, your Eli Manning era. And then I think instead of really remembering the Daniel Jones era, it's going to be the Saquon Barkley era in between. And I think that he'll just be remembered as like the guy who just didn't have a team around him that couldn't, you know what I mean? Like There's always like every team has that guy. I mean, like the Saints have Archie Manning, and you know the Vikings have tons of guys.
I think he's always going to be connected, you know, unfairly to him, to Dave Gettleman, and the fact that he was the number three pick,
right?
In an era where you don't pick running backs that high, and with a team that needed so much more than a running back, and also didn't have the pieces around him to utilize the talent of that guy. So I think it's going to be unfair, you know, but I think, you know.
Here's what I think he is. At the Christmas dinner table, when the Giants are playing on TV or played earlier that day on Christmas Day or Thanksgiving Day, let's say Thanksgiving, right? This will be the little kids at the table. Like Saquon Barkley will be a celebrity at the game or something, waving, and he'll be on TV. And the kids at the table will be like, Saquon Barkley was both an Eagle and a Giant, and then it's going to spark this family eruption conversation. You know what I'm talking about? Like, listen here, you don't understand. Saquon Barkley, he was great. He just didn't have a team. He was the wrong pick at the wrong time, right? Am I right?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a period because he's an Eagle where, you know, that instant deity status won't be put on him. But I think, you know, as all things pass, time passes, you know, he's going to get that, you know, they'll trot him out for something. There'll be some, you know, some worthy Giant gets his number retired or something, and they bring out all the Giant legends and they bring him out and he gets a nice ovation.
Yeah, that I could see.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have anything further on Saquon?
No, just, you know, I don't root for players and they're not Giants, so I'm not going to be rooting against him. I'd be rooting against him the two times a year when he plays to the Eagles, if he even plays twice a year. Right. I'll believe it when I see it. But, you know, we move on as we do with fans. Players come and go, and we're old enough now that we accept it.
Yeah, like I said, I'm worried first and foremost about scoring points, and I'll worry about winning on my division when we can win games and score points. The Giants also early on into the day today lost Xavier McKinney to the Packers to the tune of 4 years, $68 million for everyone calls him 25 years old. He's 26. He turns 26 literally next month. That makes him 26. They didn't get a 25-year-old player. Not that that really, really matters. But Xavier McKinney, 4 years, $68 million, was way more than the Giants were going to pay for him. That's just like a fact, right?
Mm-hmm.
It stinks, but I really don't know if he was going to be like a rock-solid fit for what our defense is going to be this year. I think that we're going to need I think that Xavier McKinney can be a center field free safety, but I don't think that his speed is elite to make him super reliable one in a constant single high situation. I think that somebody a little bit more rangy might be needed in this defense anyway. So, you know, it doesn't make sense if the defensive coordinator agrees with me, it doesn't make sense to be giving out big bucks to retain a guy that's not quite a solid fit for your defense on top of everything.
Well, my philosophy always is when a new defensive coordinator comes in, the first thing he does is he slightly adapts to what the talent he has. And, you know, Xavier McKinney maybe not be the perfect fit for what we may want to do, but he is still damn good. And I still think maybe, you know, You adjust around it, and then if they decide to get rid of him in a couple of years later or something, you truly develop what you want to do. But I'm putting my conspiracy hat on here for a minute. I just think the Giants, regardless of who the defensive coordinator was, I think they just wanted to move on from him. I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I don't think the Giants are necessarily in a position where such things should matter as much, but I think they had enough of him personally. I think, he's had issues with a couple of defensive coordinators now. He's had, a couple of coaches now. And I think it's something where they just want to move on from him. Now, if this is the reason why, I think that's poor judgment. But that's just my gut feeling because, you know, I think he has, you know, certainly enough talent for something where as soon as they decided not to tag him or even put the other tag on him, I knew they really didn't want him. And as soon as a guy goes out and tests the free agent, they look at this as an insult, kind of like, I think, like, okay, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to get the best deal possible. There are no hometown discounts. I look at everything. And, you know, again, the Giants are not a good team. You know, if you're not going to be willing to pay the most amount of money, why would I go back to that team when I don't have the limited chance to win? So I think they made the decision they wanted to move on from him regardless, and he left.
I think that there's some truth to that. I think that there was some level of, like, this guy is kind of a pain to deal with. He spoke quite a bit out of turn a couple of times. He also, you know, kind of unreliable with his own safety. I know that shit happens, and it's not like it was a repeated issue, but I don't know.
Brian Daboll, he's the boss.
Yeah.
He is, you know, what he says goes, and he has shown already that, you know, whether you're a player or an assistant coach, a coordinator, it's my way or the highway. And I think there's something to it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some level of that. I think that they were willing to retain him if the market was soft, but it wasn't. And I think that they were willing to keep him mainly because there's just so many holes on the roster.
Yeah. Markets are never soft. I think a lot of times teams are like, we'd like to bring him back. We think the market's soft. But, you know, this is, again, there is no collusion. These are not cartels.
I think last year the running back market was soft in that, you know, the franchise tag was a pretty decent deal, where that talented running back couldn't really match it. Multiple talented running backs couldn't really match it.
But the safety position is a much more
in demand
position to have. I mean,
I think that all the positions kind of go through their ebbs and flows. You know what I mean? Partly due to trends in the NFL, and partly due to supply and demand, player scarcity, that sort of thing. So, I think that markets can be soft from time to time. But whatever, I think that, you know, basically there was a threshold that they were not willing to spend over, and that was it.
Yeah.
Should we flip to the exciting news, the acquisitions portion of today?
We've been beat down for how many months now? Let's get some good news, please.
First thing off the bat, the Giants make a huge trade with the Carolina Panthers for edge rusher Brian Burns. Now, this is not normally what I would consider to be the biggest move that they would do, but it's certainly the most that they gave up. So the Giants gave away the 39th pick overall. That was the second round pick that's actually theirs at the top of the second round. They also gave their fifth round pick, 140th overall, to Carolina for Brian Burns and the 141st pick. According to Jordan Renan, they swapped fifth round picks. So, you know, that might be corrected, but that's what he said. So that basically means they moved back one spot in the fifth round and then gave up a second round pick for Brian Burns. Here's why this is an amazing deal right off the bat. Because I just went through all the edge rushers in this class, okay?
Mm-hmm. We just covered it last week on our show.
Brian Burns is 26 years old, so he is not old. He is a 5-year experienced, young, pure speed rusher at 6'5", 250 pounds, with 34-inch wingspan, okay? His 40 time was 4.5. That's fast by any standard. That would put him third fastest in this year's class, okay? Remember, they gave up the second-round pick for this guy. His 10-second shuttle, or whatever, the 10-second split, 1.57, that would also be third in this class. His broad jump, 10.9, would be first in this class. His three-cone, 7.01, would also be first in this class.
Yeah, but these are also 5 years ago numbers, too.
Yeah, so I understand.
I know what you're trying to compare to, but it's like we're not getting those numbers right now.
I am aware of that. What I'm saying is that what you would get in the draft this year would be an inexperienced player that probably can't hit any of those numbers at pick 39. Mm-hmm. You would be getting second-tier players which would not be hitting any of those numbers. And quite frankly, there's not that many long 6'5", like 250-plus pound pass rushers in this draft class, or they're just not really coming out like that anymore. They're not that long. and he has great bend around the edge. He's a pure speed rusher. He will work perfectly opposite Kayvon Thibodeau, and this is a defense that is not going to blitz that much, so we need to be able to pressure the quarterback. Your take without the college eyes on first.
Well, obviously, I will never get a Brian Burns jersey. But we'll get let's move past that. You know, the strength of this Giants team next year can very well be its defensive line. Now, you know, I think, you know, we invested a very high draft pick. You know, we're probably going to have to invest a lot of money in Kayvon Thibodeau when it becomes, you know, time for his next contract. We've invested a lot of money in Dexter Lawrence. This just solidifies his defensive line, and we can complain all we want about the offense and having the inability to score points and everything. But one of the easiest ways to help your offense is to get your defense off the field and give them more chances to score points. And, you know, having somebody that can go after the quarterback and make these other guys around him better is a huge advantage. The one thing you didn't mention about, you know, the transaction was also we actually are going to sign him to a long-term deal, so he'll be locked up as well. This trade does not happen if we decide to re-sign Saquon Barkley. We may not have the money for it. So, pass rush is something that this team has desperately needed. It makes, you know, it solves some problems that we'll have in the secondary with inexperience and trying to, into, you know, especially now, again, McKinney's gone. We still have a second year guy starting on one side. We don't know about the other corner, what's happening. So, you know, pressure up front solves a lot of problems around the rest of the defense and the rest of this team.
Yes. So the report is that the Giants extended him to the tune of 5 years, $150 million with $87.5 million guaranteed. For all of the contracts today, I wrote down all of the details we have, and it's not much. I know there are some with some potential incentives. The guaranteed money is important to some people that aren't the players, and I don't really understand that. I get it, but you
know. We haven't heard yet about if there's a team out or a player out.
Exactly, and I'm sure that there's going to be some favorable first year cap number for this because it's 5 years. I mean, that they are planning to have him until he's close to 30 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. He'll be 29, 28, something like that when they part ways with him, mm-hmm. or maybe even 30. But here's what I think. I've already told you he's a fit for this defense. He fits perfectly opposite Kayvon. This allows Aziz to be a, you know, backup role and be less
wearing on his body.
Yeah, but what am I trying to say? Like us counting on him less. Like he doesn't need to be that dependable. He can be in a support role as an additional speed rusher. You know, this is a veteran presence on the outside as well. You know, this is not an inexperienced, you know, raw bundle of athleticism. This is a smart, you know, whatever. Here's my other thing. I'm not surprised that they went edge rusher over corner. In this defense, we're going to be playing a lot more off-man coverage, which allows players to kind of play at their own freedom, knowing their own closing speed and that sort of thing. And it's less demanding. You know, this, like, press man all the time because we're blitzing on, you know, 80% of snaps or whatever. It's harder to find those corners. It's easier to find off-man corners. It's cheaper to find off-man corners that you know are effective. James Bradbury is an elite off-man corner. You know, as a press man corner, he wasn't, you know, whatever. So, whatever. I'm not surprised that they went there. I mean, I think for sure that they're going to leave corner to be kind of the thing that they fill in last. You know, on the cheap end, maybe two veteran guys, you know, a solid backup and a guy who can start opposite Tay Banks, whatever. Well,
you can't fill every spot in 1 year. And again, like I just said a couple of minutes ago, having a better pass rush makes it a little easier on the back end.
So, but here's my other thing. This is a great move and I'm stoked about it. And you're right. This is going to be a great defensive line with Dexter Lawrence and Kayvon, and you have Aziz Ojulari filling in. and Jordan Riley we think pretty highly of, and Nunez mm-hmm. Roaches and shit. But I really don't care if this they had completely ignored the defense this entire offseason. I don't care if they spent all of the resources in fixing the fix the offense. Score points. It's busted. And they need to figure out quarterback. If not this year, then the next year or very, very soon. And that quarterback needs to be able to come into a situation where he is not worried about surviving the game first and can worry about trusting his instincts and trusting his coaching and you know, just being able to play loose and learn from his mistakes rather than learning not to piss his pants at the snap. So this is exciting to me, but, you know, this being the biggest move, this is a good one. This should be, you know, a good long partner for Kayvon Thibodeau. We have bookend guys for a while. I can feel pretty good about it. I'm just, you know, I'm not super stoked. You know what I mean? It's not hitting my.
It's also day one of the talent acquisition phase of the year.
Yeah, but I can't imagine they're going to make another huge swing like this. I mean, the next big swing is going to be the first round pick, right?
Right, right. But, you know, do we need to have huge swings right now? I mean, I think we
No, but I mean, if there were two huge swings on offense, I think my dick would be rock hard right now. But, you know, if we only get two huge swings here, one of them's going to be defense. This next one, they better nail it, you know what I mean?
I'm not going to jump on the Viagra really until we have the quarterback situation figured out. I mean, we're going to talk next about some other acquisitions we made today, which is going to make life easier, I think, for whoever's under center. But really, until we figure out quarterback, you know, if it's Daniel Jones is healthy by week two or three and he goes out and he plays healthy and is back to the form he was in the playoffs against Minnesota, or if it's unnamed backup we bring in who plays well in his absence, or it's whoever we draft in 2025, that I'm not gonna have the warm and cuddly feelings about this offense until that's resolved, because everything else kind of is predicated on the quarterback. And right now I'm just kind of in that will be me feeling about the offense.
All right, so then let's switch to the offense. Mm-hmm. First, we'll group two guys together here. The first move was for John Runyon Jr. from the Green Bay Packers. Offensive guard has some flexibility between left and right guard. I am not sure which position he's going to play. You know, looking, I don't know if it was a Brian Daboll thing, a Joe Shane thing, both of them, or if it was a Bobby Johnson thing. But, you know, what we've seen in two training camps now is offensive linemen playing musical chairs like dangerously close to the start of the season. So if there's one thing I'm willing to bet on is that we will see John Runyon at both guard spots at some point in the summer. We don't know any of the contract details yet other than 3 years, $30 million with $17 million guaranteed. So that's like $10 million a year. You know, I think people think that's high. Here's what I'm going to tell you. It's been a down, like, very several consecutive years of offensive linemen coming out of college and in a group large. there's just not a lot anymore. They're not producing, and that means the market gets more and more scarce, and proven guys make money. So I don't think that $10 million a year is a lot for someone that can play two positions on the offensive line. Personally, I think that's on the high end, but I wouldn't call it high.
It also makes you wonder what they're thinking about with Evan Neal and all this thing, because, you know, some people think that, you know, he might get slid inside possibly if they just make the determination he's not a right tackle. I don't know. I think that what does that mean for his future? Is it kind of like, you better, you know, you're going to be a right tackle, we're going to make you a right tackle, you're going to be gone sooner than later? Or, because it seems like, you know, where would he even go? Is like, if we're filling up these guard positions with free agency.
Well, I think that the Giants needed to attack the offensive line position really, really heavily this year. And this is going to sound insane, but let me explain it. I think they need to spend for five guys on the offensive line. Because quite frankly, there is no backup tackle currently currently on the roster. The only like tackles really are Evan Neal and Andrew Thomas. So you need a backup tackle. That is a thing. I think that you need two veteran interior position guys. I think that right now what you have with Marcus McKeithen and Josh Azudu is still a complete unknown going into year three of their time here. It's cool that you can continue to develop them, but don't count on anything. Leave them as the third string guys. Assume the worst. Get two guys that you know for sure are not starter material, but two veteran guys that are would be the worst starter on a good line. And I think somebody like John Runyon is probably that guy, which means that he will probably be, you know, the worst starter on the line this year. And Ben Bredesen, I think, is another guy that you can re-sign and be like, you can play three interior spots and you know what you're doing without being embarrassing. That's perfect. I think they need to do that. And I think that, you know, they need three veteran backups, and I think that they need to consider the future. Get young. They need to draft a tackle, and they need to draft an interior position guy. They don't have to be high draft picks. They can be a third and a fourth round pick if you want to. Where Evan Neal fits in all that is up to Evan Neal this year. I think that Evan Neal can freely, you know, compete for the tackle spot in front of, we're going to talk about him next, but Jermaine Illuminor, who they got from the Raiders. They signed as a free agent from the Raiders. I think that he can freely compete with him. Either one of those guys could be the backup. Either one of those guys could be the starter. I think that that's perfectly fair. I think Illuminor projects as a better backup because he has left tackle, right tackle experience. Right now, Evan Neal doesn't even have single season experience.
Yeah.
So that's and if his future is to kick inside, then that, it's not like he's going to have a ton of competition on the inside this year. I mean, like I said, I'm sure they're going to play musical chairs with these guys, but I think that you give him a shot, but don't fuck around. You know, if you're Brian Daboll and you don't bank on upside. If week one Illuminor looks like the better right tackle, I don't want to see Evan Neal out there just because you invest. Fuck that. I can't with that shit.
I agree with you, but I'm also not ready to throw in the towel on March 11th that Evan Neal is a bust and that's the end of it. I think he's going to get every opportunity to compete. And I think having, you know, the change in offensive line coach, I think is going to help him a lot. And I also think knowing that his potential NFL mortality is starting to stare him in the face. You know, this is the free pass you get. Well, I was a rookie, or, you know, my second year, I'm growing. This is year three. And, you know, again, we're elevating the talent that's coming in on this team. And, you know, I've said this several times about Evan Neal. I just can't believe that the guy who was considered the best offensive lineman in the best conference in the country can't play, can't be a starter in this league. You know, maybe it's just his, you know, a little maturity has to happen. And now he's going to be, you know, 3 years removed from college, and better coaching and better competition will get there. But I'm not ready to throw the baby out with the bathwater yet.
No, like I said, it's up to Evan Neal where he plays. Yeah, in absolutely. All this. But I think that as a franchise, you put yourself in the position where Evan Neal can be the backup. You know, you're comfortable with Illuminor being out there. Or, you know, maybe Evan Neal becomes the best right guard in Giants history. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that could absolutely be.
Here's what we need to keep your eye on the prize. The goal is we need the Giants' offensive line to be better. I'm not concerned about the individual pieces, what that combination is or something. I need this line to be better because doesn't matter who the quarterback is, doesn't matter what receivers, if we have, you know, Saquon Barkley or Matt Barkley or Barkley the dog from Sesame Street as your running back, it doesn't matter if you have these offensive lines we've been trotting out for the last several years. They suck. They're inefficient. They don't get the job done. The overall offensive line has to get better. And bringing in more guys fosters more talent. If a guy that was starting last year now has been kicked down to the bench, that means we've raised the talent level a little bit in the production. So that's what I'm looking for, and that's what we need.
So I want to talk a little bit about the players, but before I do, the deal for Jermaine Illuminor is allegedly 2 years, $14 million. So let's talk John Runyon. Like I said, left guard, right guard, versatility. People have described him as like Mark Lewinsky 2.0. I haven't watched that much of him, but I would say the exact opposite. I would say that overall, he's probably the same in that he's good at one thing and not the other. Glowinski was a fairly accomplished run blocker and a very terrible pass blocker. I would say that Runyon is a functional but not brag-worthy run blocker. And as a pass blocker, is more than passable. And I think that that shows a smarter evaluation of what this team needs. So they didn't break the bank getting a $10 million guard. They got him for 3 years, so it's a veteran presence for a decent chunk of time. I'm sure that there's going to be a two-year out in there, same as they did with Glowinski. But it puts an emphasis on what you want a modern offense to be around. And I think that this kind of ties into the Saquon conversation. You know, when you come here, you make a quick move in year one. You only have money to spend on really one move. The offensive line sucks. You got a running quarterback and you got a running back that's, you know, extremely talented. You get a lineman that can run block. I think that was kind of the thinking at the time. You know, it was the only one that went around that was kind of cheap. I don't really remember what the guard free agent market was like or whatever back then, but you know, different story now. You know, we moved on from the Saquon thing. Forget the running back. We're trying to build an offense now. I need a guard that can pass block. You got yourself a pass blocker. That's kind of how I look at John Runyon. He's not going to be great, but he's passable, which is what we need.
Remember, this front office, this coaching staff inherited Saquon Barkley. They didn't pick him. So they had to work around what they had. Like I said before, you know, you work around the talent you have and you adjust from there. Now that he's no longer here, you can, you know, you're bringing in pieces and the support pieces around to fit your vision of what you want your offense to be.
And Jermaine Illuminor, here's a couple things that I know. He's 29 years old. So for context, he is 7 years younger than me. 6'4", 330 pounds. He went to Texas A&M. Where he had transferred from like some small school, I think in Scranton. Why is that important? Because he went to my high school.
Really?
That's right. He moved here from London. He moved to the town. My high school serves a region, so he didn't move to my town. He moved to the town that my high school's in. The Giants allegedly view him as a four position player. So that's both guard spots, both tackle spots. So for 2 years and $14 million, that's saying a lot. Now, is that overinflating what they think of him? I say no. You know why? Because their offensive line coach coached him at Vegas right before he came here. So if the Giants view him as a four-position player, it's because the Raiders viewed him as a four-position player. So I would mostly consider him a right tackle, though. I think that he is going to be heavily competing with Evan Neal for the right tackle spot. And I think my early on guess is that he's going to look better to the naked eye, to the untrained eye. For us and the fans, I think in those summer training camp days when we're sitting under the bleachers with the ceiling, I think there's going to be a lot of tweets about how much better Illuminor looks than Evan Neal.
Especially from a fan base that wants that to happen. I think a lot of fans have given up on Evan Neal and are going to be mentally seeing things of he looks better even if he isn't. So
yeah, but I mean, I think also it comes from a place of Giants fans just wanting to see a solution.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like the backup quarterback is always the most popular player. The new guy is always the most popular player, too.
Where I stand on these deals are, I think these are two very solid deals. I am very happy with Jermaine Illuminor as a backup swing tackle, which means that I can deal with him being the starter if he has to be the starter, which is good news because I would have killed to have somebody like him on this team last year. Evan Neal was hurt for more than half the year, I think. And even when he wasn't playing great. So
and Andrew Thomas was out for quite a bit too. We could have swung him over there.
Absolutely. John Runyon Jr., I don't really know how he – but I mean, I feel better about him than I do Mark Lewinsky. Like I said, I needed the Giants to attack the offensive line five times this offseason. And three of them need to be veterans. And they did the two most important ones. I do think that retaining Ben Bredesen is still on the table for fairly cheap as well.
There's two ways to attack rebuilding this offensive line. One is, what is the immediate short-term solution so we have at least a functioning offense so we don't get people killed? And then how do you build for, you know, rebuilding this team for making a run at some point? And you can't solve both at the same, you know, with the same transactions. I think what they're doing now is they're stabilizing this unit to be functional. And, you know, the moves to really, you know, who is going to be the offensive line if this team's going to make a serious playoff run in 2, 3, 4 years from now, I think we'll be discussing those acquisitions Thursday, Friday, Saturday of the draft.
You nailed it. So what they really needed to do, and I expect Ben Bredesen or someone similar to sign to a 2-year deal. For 2 years, you want your offensive line to, at the bare minimum, be Andrew Thomas, someone like Ben Bredesen, John Michael Schmitz, someone like John Runyon, and someone like Jermaine Illuminor. If Evan Neal wins that spot over him, that's perfect because you need a backup tackle. You know, I think that that's the bare minimum of what they need. So that's what you do in this when you're getting these veteran guys. And I guarantee you John Runyon's going to have a 2-year out. Jermaine Illuminor signed for 2 years. And I think that Ben Bredesen or someone like him is going to sign for 2 years. In the draft, I expect them to attack both the tackle and guard position. And I wouldn't be surprised if that guard position has some flexibility.
Yeah, I agree. And I think those picks will be higher than you think they will be too. Like, I think...
I could see it be a second round pick being, you know, somebody like a tackle maybe.
Absolutely. That's what I was getting to for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, even the worst case scenario is that Evan Neal plays well enough where you retain him and Illuminor goes and you have a third tackle in your draft pick and you make your decision then. Or maybe you let both go because the third tackle is the best one you got. You know, there's no losing when you have that many guys in your bench.
And the thing I will say to Giant fans is, again, this is day one of free agent agreeing period. You know, let's not judge this offseason based on one day's worth of work. We still have, you know, free agency. We still have the draft. We still have non-drafted free agents to pick up. There could be a trade or two. So I don't make any definitive thoughts in your head of, that's the best we did. You know, we lost more than we gained. We haven't solved anything. There's still a long way to go. And your perception of this will change in the rest of this process if you allow yourself to have an open mind for it. That's why I'm not freaking out about the losses. That's why I'm not like, that's it for who we got. This has to play out.
No, I think this is a very solid first day. I think that this attacks a lot of spots, and we're going to hit the last spot. Well, there's two more things I want to talk about. First is Devin Singletary. The Giants replaced the hole vacated or whatever by Saquon Barkley to the tune of 3 years, $16.5 million with escalators that could make it to $19.5 million. It's quite literally half the price of Saquon Barkley. He's the same age, arguably a little bit younger, like 7 months younger. What's really interesting to me is that in a lot of ways, other than being number 26, they and running in a similar kind of scheme, they're not really all that much alike.
Is he a little better pass blocking and a little better pass receiving?
I think that he's probably the same in pass blocking. You know, not great. You could probably coach him up to be good enough. I don't think it's really unwilling, like I think some of Saquon Barkley's was. Mm-hmm. here's where they're majorly different. He is not going to try and juke people out of their shoes seven ways to Shinola. He has similar contact balance. He's going to run through guys. He's a one cut, you know, decent speed, good burst kind of running back. He can, you know, just plant a foot and just race through a hole. When he goes off to the races, a really fast defensive back is probably going to catch him. He's not going to make guys look very stupid. He's just going to run through them. Here's the major thing where they're different. Okay, ready? Mm-hmm. I could only find one injury in his injury history.
That was going to be the next question I was going to ask.
In 2019, he had a hamstring strain, and I don't think he missed any. If he missed any time, it was for 3 weeks. In those 3 weeks, I believe he was questionable the whole time.
That's what I like to hear, because we need availability as much as we need an influx in talent. We need an influx of durability and availability.
I think, you know, the thing that I think is interesting is that Devin Singletary is, you know, a one cut guy. Like, he's just going to get north and south. As soon as he sees the hole that he chooses in whatever zone scheme, he's just going to hit it. And it feels like that was kind of, you know, was that not the criticism for a lot of Saquon Barkley at times? Like, you know,
a little dancing around too much.
Like, sometimes that saved them from an 8-yard loss and made it a 2-yard gain, but a lot of times it made what would have been like a 12-yard gain like a 3-yard one because he did that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not saying that Devin Singletary is going to be better. I think what I'm saying is that Devin Singletary is a very known quantity in what he's going to give you, and therefore the focus is probably not going to be on him in the offense, though he does catch passes out of the backfield very well.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's you're not going to replace him. He's not, you know, yard for yard, carry for carry, stride for stride, but we need, you know, we need a number one running back, and he's a number one running back. So let's see how he does with a better offensive line, we're hoping, than we had last year. Stability at running back, a better passing game, all of that stuff. All the pieces fit together. They all connected. They're not independent things. So
I am wondering if the Giants are going to add another running back. I know that they are. They're going to have a stable of three, but you can get them really cheap. And it seems like every year an undrafted free agent running back that we get is legitimately in the conversation to be that guy. So I don't think that they need to spend high, and I haven't looked at the draft class yet, so I don't really know. But like, I wonder if in the fifth round or something like that, there's a guy that's just like shouldn't be there, if they'll just be willing to pull the trigger, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, nobody on this roster are guys that we're just in love with as, you know, guys that we need to have in this running back room. So again, it's based on their board and who they, you know, they think it's a value or not. I don't think they're going in looking for a running back, but I think if one is there that they feel is a discount, go grab them.
Last move. The Giants retained three very core special teams players. They got that shit out of the way right away on 1-year deals. They retained their returner in Gunnar Olszewski. That's great because we won't see any starters back there returning punts and kicks. They retained Casey Kreider so that they have a long snapper to go with their specialists, the punter and the kicker. And importantly, in my opinion, they retained Carter Coughlin. I say this because the Giants had two good special teams players in Carter Coughlin and Cam Brown. But it seemed to me that Cam Brown was nothing more than a special teams player. Carter Coughlin, if shit hit the fan, it felt like he could actually play linebacker. You know what I mean? Without just being a total inept disaster. Cam Brown, right, even in preseason, like 3 years into his career here, was screwing shit up on defense. You know what I mean? Like, if they're going to pick only one guy to retain, I'm glad that it was Carter Coughlin over Cam Brown. Even though he's arguably probably worse athletically, they both seem to be about equal, in my opinion, in their special teams ability. But Carter Coughlin actually offers you an emergency defensive option.
We're expecting better things from special teams with a new special teams coach as well, too. So,
yeah, and but I mean, it was important to me that they locked up these three core special teams guys because, you know, you make this point every year that special teams players, most of them are the bottom like seven guys on your roster. So, you know, they identified these guys as being key parts of their special teams. They, you know, I'm sure there's not that many key parts. So,
yeah,
what you got.
Agreed. And again, we're not breaking the bank with any of these guys either.
Nope. No, yeah. And nor are we handcuffing long term. All three of them were 1 year deals.
Exactly.
I think that's it for free agency kickoff, man. I think that's everything that we had to go over. We are going to do another episode, I think, Wednesday, so that by Thursday morning we'll have our edge draft class kind of conversation, which should be a really short one.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, the script has changed from what we were preparing for that show already. So,
yeah, absolutely. So, cool bonus little midweek bonus episode on that, and it's because next week our episode's going to be delayed. I will be away on vacation, so we won't be able to record.
Who gave you vacation?
Yeah, I don't know. Especially after getting blackout drunk, it's like I don't deserve one.
Well, it's not like we're getting paid anyway, so what's the difference? Go ahead.
All right, everyone. That's going to do it for us, so be sure to like and subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and, of course, YouTube. Tell a friend about Just Giants and Jersey Cyclone Brewing. Great beer, great show. And follow us on Twitter at @football_grump and at @thecrankyfan. Until next time. Go Giants.
Go Giants.